Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Daniel Foster of National Review Online, in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Thursday. And, Dan, it's not often that we get a little bit of reality from President Obama, so we need to celebrate that anytime it actually comes about. The president was speaking on Monday with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News, and the first question right out of the box was, you know, a lot of people don't think we're better off than they were 4 years ago, so how do you convince them that they are? And Obama flat out says, well, they're not.
Well, I don't think they're better off than they were 4 years ago. They're not better off than they were before Lehman's collapsed, before the financial crisis, before this extraordinary recession that we're going through. I think that what we've seen is that we've been able to make steady progress to stabilize the economy.
And, of course, from there he went on to his regular talking points about how his jobs bill contains provisions that every bipartisan person in Congress ever has supported. So we need to get behind this thing that is obviously dead in the water if you listen to Democrats in the Senate or Eric Cantor in the House. But the fact that the president actually admits to the classic Reagan question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? The answer is no. Now, of course, it's not his fault in his opinion, but as some folks have said, that little clip could be very, very useful in campaign ads and for whoever the Republican nominee is next year.
Right, but the time period is so crucial there, right? The arithmetic is what's doing all the work there. I mean, this president has actually just found a brilliant, subtle way to blame Bush one more time because he specifically says you're not better off than you were 4 years ago, but he wasn't president 4 years ago. So he still has a year to work with there, a year and change to work with before it's really his fault. I wonder, you know, I'm a naive young guy. We've talked about this before. I like to think the best of people. I wonder, I was reading a pretty good, although unsympathetic profile of Eric Cantor in the new issue of New York Magazine, and it rehearses that exchange between Cantor and Obama 3 days after his inauguration when they're talking about stimulus, and Cantor had showed up with a point-by-point Republican plan for what to do about the economy, and President Obama reportedly just sort of dismissed it and said famously, elections have consequences, Eric, and I won. I wonder if in his heart of hearts, really, at this point, President Obama has any doubts at all about the economic worldview and the ideology that led him to do the things he did with the stimulus and with Obamacare and with this latest jobs bill, if he's actually chastened by the fact that we're lingering in a jobless non-recovery after 3 years of his policies, or if he just thinks that it's George Bush's fault and it's about Republican intransigence. I don't know. I'd like to think that maybe somewhere he nurses a private doubt, but you can never be sure when he says things like this.
One thing you can definitely take to the bank, as you pointed out, is that even once the full 4 years are up, it still won't have been his fault because, you know, what he will blame on Bush happened before he took office.
Yeah, and I think he's going to find some way to incorporate faster-than-light neutrinos into the whole conversation. Blame it on time-traveling subatomic particles.
Yeah, he offered a full defense of Solyndra yesterday. So if you think he's somehow drank some truth serum, no. He just is probably positioning himself the best way he knows how for a very difficult re-election run. That re-election run will not include a head-to-head matchup, however, as we shift to our second martini with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. You may remember Governor Christie saying some things like this.
I'm 100% certain I'm not going to run.
So you have that. You have him saying months ago that he didn't feel like he was qualified. You have him saying, you know, as we've mentioned ad nauseum, that I might have to commit suicide before you realize that I'm really not going to run. Well, today, after supposed great reconsideration, his position is exactly the same as it's always been. And Chris Christie will not be seeking the Republican nomination, much to the chagrin of some. And to others, it was they just took him at his word and they thought he was really that close to getting in the race. So now that it's official, Dan, obviously we're going to miss his candor in the race, his ability to call a spade, something that I think a lot of the Republican candidates could use in some of these debates, and certainly when they get ready for Obama. But I think Chris Christie could still be a very useful figure in this campaign, even if he's not on the ticket.
Absolutely. And I think, look, I'm a Christie fan. I don't think he should have run this time around. I think that he made the right decision. I think that with all these candidates grasping for different constituencies and their opposition research teams in full effect, the risk-reward profile for Christie just wasn't there. Would he have entered as a favorite? Sure, but you know who also entered as a favorite? Rick Perry. I think that the oppo research teams of his opponents would have come up with some of his more moderate Northeast positions on things like gun control, and they would have hurt him. And what we would have had is a guy who had a decent but not great chance of winning the nomination, and on the flip side, a guy who, if he lost the nomination, will have seen his stature and his power as a reform-minded conservative governor really diminished. So I just didn't think the risk-reward was there. And I also took Christie at his word when he told us here at National Review when he was here last year, and he told just about everybody who asked him that he didn't feel like he was ready either personally or policy-wise to be president. Now imagine if a young Senator Barack Obama had the same sense of humility. So I think he's got it exactly right. He's not the kind of guy who wants to hire a couple of former Bush foreign policy staffers and do a couple of two-hour briefings and say, you know what, I'm up to speed on foreign affairs. I can run for president and be the commander-in-chief, largest army the world has ever known. I think he made the right call. You're right, we're going to miss a Christie-like presence in this race. But I do have to say, I believe in some sense also that he was reconsidering the last week. I mean, I don't think he was ever leaning towards running, but I do think that he was, overwhelmed and authentically so by the groundswell of people, including a woman at the Reagan Library, literally begging him to run with emotion in her voice and tears in her eyes. You know, I think he probably took that to heart and thought if there was some way he could see himself doing it in a way that he could maintain his personal integrity and feel comfortable with and feel like he was ready for. And unsurprisingly, he came to the same answer that he's had for the last, year and change. But this does raise, for instance, to me, the chances of him accepting a vice presidential nod from about 0 to about 5%. That to me, that's the official Dan Foster forecast here there's now a very small chance I think he would allow himself to be considered for VP. But I also don't think that's his style. I mean, I don't even think the guy would ever run for Senate. I think he's an executive.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. He has basically said before in the past he's not interested, and he knows his personality is not at all suited to the number two spot on the ticket. So Chris Christie will not, unless there's a major surprise, be on the ballot in 2012. And another guy who might not be on the ballot, and this is a major prediction that I've made for a while, and I may very well be wrong, but I'm sticking to it. I don't think Joe Biden's going to be on the ticket next year. And
really? That's interesting.
We've got
What's your theory?
I feel like he adds nothing to President Obama, electorally speaking, and he's been thrown out there for all these debt negotiations that clearly the public hasn't been enamored with. His foreign policy expertise, I don't know that that's relied on a lot. And what we just learned from his recent appearance on this Florida radio station, 970 AM WFLA in Tampa, is that perhaps he's not all that much of an insider in this administration. He was on this program talking about these Occupy Wall Street protests, and the hosts were talking about, how on one side you've got this group led by Van Jones, the former green job czar, and then you have, the Tea Party on the other side. And here's how Vice President Biden believes that this is lining up.
And so you have on the one end Van Jones's guys, whoever he is, talking about,
used to be
Wall
in the administration,
the
used to be green czar.
Oh, is that? All right. Well,
So there's Joe Biden and his latest gem, not apparently knowing who used to be on staff there at the White House before being forced to resign in a highly controversial situation when Van Jones was outed as a 9/11 truther. So once again, real grand slam there from the vice president. And I'm not really sure that this president considers him an asset to the ticket. It's obviously very rare for a sitting president to switch nominees, certainly in recent times, but I'm just not sure what Joe Biden brings to the ticket.
Look, you can't expect the vice president of the United States to memorize every single czar in the administration, can you? I mean, the number of czars that have been appointed, I've said it before and I'll say it again, we need a czar. And if there were a czar, then you know, he'd be the kind of guy who could round up all the relevant knowledge about the czars and the administration and brief the vice president of the United States and the rest of the National Security Council so that they could be up to speed on things like this. But I'll bet you that Vice President Biden did know of some Van Jones. It was probably that guy Jones who had the awesome E350 van in the 70s with the moonroof and the carpeting in the back, you know. They used to go in there, play records, that sort of thing. I bet you he does know a Van Jones. It's just not the one in question.
Could very well be the case. So I guess we shouldn't be too hard on him. He's probably just getting them confused. But of all the czars, I'm pretty sure this is the one that's gotten a little bit more media attention than a lot of the others. So lots to keep our eyes on here. Chris Christie making his announcement official this afternoon. And Dan, I'm sure we'll have plenty more fun stuff to talk about tomorrow. Great to have you with us.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Thank you.